The R in our CARESS model stands for research. Research? As in going to the library? Well, sort of, but this is a lot more fun. For an active listener, research means asking the right questions at the right time. It also means responding with feedback to check your understanding of the speaker's message. This is where you get to be creative, play detective, and deepen your ability to be empathic. When you respond effectively to what the speaker is saying by asking good questions, by reflecting back and paraphrasing what you've heard, the conversation becomes a dialogue. Researching enables you to clarify what you've heard, enlarge upon a subject, or go into a particular topic in more depth. Under the heading of research, we'll also talk about how to use questions and statements to direct the speaker to a new topic area or to get him back on track when he's fallen off. When you know how to skillfully and artfully ask good questions, you can prompt the speaker to vent her feelings, whether she's angry or enthusiastic. And with the selective use of feedback, you can reinforce the areas where the two of you are in agreement. So let's dive into R for research by listening to a conversation that models some of the techniques we'll cover.
You know, I'm feeling really depressed.
Really? What are you experiencing?
I feel numb most of the time. I don't want to do much of anything.
So you feel really low, like you have no energy?
Yeah, I know I'm probably reacting to the divorce. It became final last week, but I don't feel much of anything. I know we did the right thing, me and Joe. There's no doubt about that. But now I feel so empty.
Well, going through a divorce is one of the toughest things a person can do. Do you feel you gave the marriage every chance you could?
You know, I think so. We were in counseling for the last 2 years. Even the counselor used the term irreconcilable differences. I just feel so sad that it didn't work. We tried, but it didn't work.
Would you like to talk more about it?
No, not really. I need to get on with my life.
Well, got any plans? I hope you're thinking about taking care of yourself while your heart is on the mend.
Well, there are a few things on my calendar.
Really? Like what?
Oh, a long weekend in Santa Fe. Maybe a concert or two.
Good for you. And I know you like to hear jokes. Now listen, I just heard one. You want to hear it?
Sure.
Did you hear the one about the two peanuts who went for a walk?
No.
One was assaulted.
Oh, my 10-year-old will love that one.
I'm sure.
That could have been a very difficult conversation for the listener, but he handled it well, don't you think? He asked considerate questions to draw the woman out. He reflected her feelings back to her. For instance, he said, "So you really feel low, like you have no energy?" He gave her a chance to vent her feelings, which she declined to do. When she shifted the subject to getting on with her life, he followed that train of thought with an expansion question. And he gave her what I call feeling feedback, to show he really cared about what she was saying as opposed to simply understanding it. Let's focus now on the various kinds of questions you can ask a speaker, and then we'll talk about the overt and subtle levels of feedback you can give. Your ability to ask the right questions at the right time is an essential part of researching. If your goal is to gather more information from the speaker, whether the conversation is personal or work-related, then you must perfect the art of asking questions. The most basic approach you can take with research questions is to follow the funnel technique. You begin with broad, open-ended questions and build on the speaker's responses, and you move down the funnel by asking specific, closed-ended questions to fill in the details. It's like painting a picture. You start with a blank canvas and begin filling in the background with broad brushstrokes. Then you gradually add more and more detail with finer brushstrokes until you have a complete picture. An example of a broad, open-ended question is this. Could you tell me why that's so important to you? Open-ended questions are difficult to answer with a single word, like yes or no. They require a statement. Open-ended questions not only gather a lot of information, they also demonstrate your interest in the other person's situation. Such questions enable you to encourage and increase dialogue because they give the speaker a chance to relax and tell you what he thinks is important. Open-ended questions often start with tell me, how, who, what, where, or why. Here's a brief example. Imagine two people meeting on an airplane.
Hi, my name is Ellen. What do you do for a living?
I'm a writer.
A writer? What kind of writing do you do?
Well, mostly humor. Occasionally I write something serious or philosophical, but people seem to laugh at that too.
Humor. You know, I always thought that must be the hardest kind of writing to do. Tell me how you do it.
Well, for me, I like plays on words. You know, witty humor.
Uh-huh.
Did you hear the one about the two peanuts who went for a walk?
No. How's that go?
Well,
that's the last time we'll hear that joke, I promise. What I want you to notice is how Ellen drew the man out with broad, open-ended questions. What kind of writing do you do could have elicited a longer answer. Since it didn't, she followed it up with another open-ended question. Tell me how you do it. As you heard, the broad questions were comfortable for the writer to answer. They gave him freedom to tell Ellen whatever he wants. By the time she asks more specific questions, he's relaxed and probably will be more willing to share information with her. Not only that, but most people experience a higher level of trust in the listener in proportion to how much information they previously shared. In other words, if you can get the conversational ball rolling, it will continue to roll as long as it doesn't hit any bumps along the way. Closed-ended questions are used to extract simple, clear-cut facts or to direct the conversation in a specific direction. It's important to understand when to use open-ended and closed-ended questions. Remember the funnel technique. You generally begin with broader, open-ended questions, then move toward the closed-ended ones. How do you know what question to ask next? Usually, you let the words of the speaker direct you. You build on the key words in the speaker's last statement. Recall that in our example, when the writer said he wrote mostly humor, Ellen chose to key on the word humor and use that as the basis of her next question. Let's do a bit of practice on this technique. You'll hear a brief statement. Imagine it's being made by someone you want to have a conversation with. Think of the question you'd ask to further the conversation along.
I see a lot of movies, especially dramas. And my favorite directors are Robert Altman and Oliver Stone.
What question would you ask? What are the key words? Dramas, directors, Robert Altman, and Oliver Stone. That gives you a lot of possibilities for questions. What's your favorite drama? Is a closed-ended question because it requires a specific answer. The question, which Altman films do you like the best, is a broader, more open-ended question. How do you think the two directors compare is an even broader question. Let's try another one.
I've had to travel to Europe frequently for my work over the last 3 years.
What are the key words in her statement? Travel, Europe, and work. If you key on travel, you might ask, do you enjoy traveling? Where else have you been besides Europe? Or, do you get to sightsee while you're there? If you key on Europe, your question might be, where in Europe have you been? Or, what's your favorite time of year in Europe? If you're thinking about business, you'll probably focus on the word work. An obvious question is, what kind of work do you do? Which may get you a brief or lengthy answer. If the answer is brief, such as, I'm a buyer for a department store, you've got some key information to follow up on. There are some general guidelines to follow in developing your research questions. First, keep your questions simple and ask just one at a time. Here's an example of a complex and confusing question.
What do you think about the new marketing plan, and do you think the new ad campaign will confuse our customers or benefit us in the long term?
Too complex. There are actually three questions in that one. What do you think about the new marketing plan? Do you think the new ad campaign will confuse our customers? And do you think the ad campaign will benefit us in the long term? You're unlikely to get a meaningful answer to those three questions. In fact, you'll be lucky if you get one part of it answered thoroughly. If you ask a multifaceted question, people tend to answer only one part, whether it's the part they remember, the one that most interests them, or the part that they feel most comfortable with. If you listen to a radio talk show, you might notice that the good interviewers ask only one question at a time. What happens when they ask a two-part question? Very few talk show guests will take each part and answer it. In fact, some guests who are savvy to talk shows will not answer any of the parts, since the complex question probably confused the audience too. They'll use the opportunity to say whatever they want. A second guideline for research questions is to follow a topic to its conclusion. Make sure you've exhausted the topic or you've at least gotten all the information you need from the speaker before you switch gears. Anytime you're tempted to offer an idea that begins with, "Oh, and by the way," you're probably getting off track. Save it for later. And third, be sure your questions are non-threatening. This is a tricky one that requires you to be sensitive to the other person. What may be a perfectly fine question for you could be taken as an invasion of privacy by someone else. Let me use my mother as an example. To her, the world is an extended Italian family. She's very people-oriented, so much so that she makes Billy Crystal look like an introvert. When she goes to a restaurant, she greets the hostess and the patrons as though they're in her kitchen. Anyone who makes eye contact with her is fair game. She might approach a table of strangers in a restaurant and say to them, "Hello, my name is Margaret. What's yours? Are you Italian?" "No." "Too bad. What kind of work do you do?" "Is this your husband?" "What kind of work does he do?" And on and on and on. She joins in other people's conversations, and she doesn't mind being asked personal questions. So, of course, she sees nothing wrong with asking other people, "What's the special occasion for dinner out tonight? Your birthday? How old are you?" If we took a poll, many of the people in the restaurant would think that Margaret Alessandra is wonderful. The rest of them are likely to react differently. So asking yourself, "Is this a question I wouldn't mind answering?" is not sufficient. You need to ask yourself, "Is this a question someone else might take offense at?" So the guidelines for questions are, keep them simple, on topic, and non-threatening. Now that you have a pretty good idea of the difference between open-ended and closed-ended questions and the funnel technique, let's look at the art of questioning from a different angle. In general, the questions you use have three primary functions: to expand, to clarify, and to redirect. The broad open-ended questions and the follow-up questions we just discussed are examples of expansion questions. General all-purpose expansion questions include, "Tell me more about that," or, "What would that mean to you?" For those of you who pride yourselves on your knowledge of grammar, I know that "tell me more about that" is technically not a question. I like to think of it as a questioning statement. Use expansion questions when you want to get as much information as possible from the other person. Those questions allow the speaker to reply in whatever form, amount of detail, and direction she likes. Expansion questions are useful at the beginning of almost every conversation, whether you're discussing facts or feelings. They're particularly helpful when a complex problem needs to be solved or when you're brainstorming. They give the speaker the green light to formulate new ideas and express them. One important tip on asking expansion questions is to make sure they're as neutral as possible. Here are three examples of open-ended questions on the same topic. Which one would you describe as the most neutral?
What have you been doing to improve the morale in your department? Why do you suppose morale has been so bad in your department lately? Tell me what's been going on lately in terms of morale in your department.
If you guessed that the third question was the most neutral, the one in which the questioner revealed the least amount of bias, you're right. The first one, "What have you been doing to improve morale," implies something is amiss and may put the speaker on the defensive. Of course, if you've already determined that improvement is what you're talking about, then it can be a perfectly fine question. The second question would certainly put someone on the defensive. "Why do you suppose morale has been so bad in your department?" No need to ask it that way unless you intend to put that person on the defensive. The third version of the question doesn't take any position on what's been happening. It's the most neutral because it allows the person being questioned the most latitude to talk about the good and the bad things that have taken place. Let's practice a bit on formulating neutral questions. This is assuming you want the most expansive answer possible. Let's say that you need to know how your client feels about buying foreign-made versus American-made products, and you don't want to bias him in either direction. What open-ended question could you formulate that would give you the answer that you're looking for? I'll give you a few seconds to think about it. Okay, you want to draw out your client on foreign-made versus American-made products. Here are some possibilities for open-ended, neutral questions. What are your concerns regarding where the products we're discussing are manufactured? Or, tell me about the policies you've established regarding country of origin for the products you purchase. Or, here's one more. What does it mean to you to have the products manufactured outside the United States versus inside the United States? In each of those questions, the questioner tries not to reveal any personal bias. Again, that signals to the speaker that he has the latitude to take any position on the question without being judged. If the questioner were to say, for instance, "Do you prefer American-made products to foreign-made ones?" that begins to indicate a bias on the part of the questioner. It's also a closed-ended question. That is, it can be answered with one word. That won't get you very much information on how your client really feels. So in summary, expansion questions are open-ended, designed to elicit as much information as possible, and they're worded in a neutral way so as not to bias the answer. The next order of questions are ones which clarify. Clarify for you, and perhaps for the speaker as well. Here are some generic examples. "I'm not sure I understand. Could you cover that in more detail? Can you give me an example? What exactly do you mean by that?" Let's listen to a couple looking for a new house as they talk to their real estate agent, whom they're meeting for the first time.
"Jane and I are looking for something a little smaller with less upkeep than we have now. Our kids have all moved out and we don't need the big house we've got now."
I see. What do you have in mind in terms of a new house?
"Something on one level. Small garden. Maybe a few trees, but not a lot that shed their leaves in the fall."
"I get the picture that you want a house that has low maintenance needs.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not clear on what it looks or feels like. Could you describe what you have in mind?"
"Oh, 3 bedrooms. The kids still visit, you know. Probably a workshop area for me to tinker with my stained glass pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's not too far from the church we go to."
"Okay, the picture's starting to get clearer, but I still need to have a better feel for the style of the house you're looking for. There are a lot of 3-bedroom homes on the market. How about if we go through my current catalog of houses for sale?
Okay.
Maybe you could point out the ones that look like they're in the ballpark."
Clarifying questions come in very handy when you're in sales and the potential customer has only a vague idea of their needs or what they're looking for. Clarifying questions are also useful when someone's made a broad statement that he'd like you to accept at face value, as in the following conversation between George and Mary.
"I'm sure we've solved our employee morale problem. I just don't see any evidence of it anymore."
"Well, I think I'd like to be sure about that before I sign on in the public relations department. What would you describe as evidence for the problem before it was solved?"
"Oh, we had a few grievances. There was a picket of the board meeting by the staff. Some malcontents wrote an editorial for the local newspaper. None of that's happening now."
"Uh-huh. I'd like to understand that a little bit better. How would you describe the process you went through to address the issues that were being raised?"
"Well, we identified the ringleaders and fired them."
Good thing Mary asked some probing, clarifying questions before she took on the job of representing this company to the public. Clarifying questions are obviously useful when you don't understand the speaker's meaning. And sometimes you can sense that the speaker himself doesn't have a clear picture of what he's saying. That's when clarifying questions can help him as well. Good openers for clarifying questions are as follows. "I want to be sure I understand. Help me understand. Would you clarify that? Would you mind restating that idea one more time?" Each of these clarifying openers sets up an open-ended question. Again, you don't want to put the other person on the defensive with your clarifying question. It's best to present the confusion as your listening problem, not his or her communication problem. The third use for questions is to redirect the conversation. Here's where the skillful, active listener can really help shape the conversation. When you change direction or a topic in a conversation, you acknowledge the current issue and then ask a question that brings up a new issue. You are redirecting the conversation to an area not previously discussed. You might say, "Okay, I think I understand what's important to you here. Could you tell me how you feel about..." And then you bring up the next topic. Again, you'll probably want to make that question on the new issue broad and open-ended. Let's listen as Michael, who's an interior designer, uses questions to redirect his conversation with Doris, a homeowner.
"So, we plan to upgrade our main floor in a variety of ways, but most importantly, we want to have the whole area to have a theme. That means when you go from room to room, there's a feeling of continuity, of a flow, a kind of inner harmony that resonates in each room. And the whole thing forms a symphony, you know, like Bach."
"I have a sense of what you're saying, like a Bach symphony, elegant but not overly dramatic."
"Yes."
"I need to ask you a couple of other questions on your sense of style and colors."
"Style, yes. Understated, close to functional, but not pedestrian. Timeless, not dated, yet having a very contemporary feel. With warm colors, browns, greens, a hint of orange and red, mm-hmm. like a walk in the woods on a fall day. No sharp contrasts, no blacks or whites,
okay.
no blues or yellows next to each other. Flow, harmony."
"Okay, soft, warm colors, mm-hmm. and contemporary but simple styling. Mm-hmm. I'm getting the picture. Now, what about lighting? You know, lighting is so important to the feel of a home. With this house, you'll have
light.
The choice of..."
"Let there be light, lots of natural light. How about some skylights? In the night, indirect light filling the room. But there's no glare in any one area. Oh, yes, as I talk, I'm getting a better and better idea of what I want. Are you taking notes?"
Good thing Michael knew the art of using questions to redirect. Sounds like Doris could write a book or a symphony on each topic he presents. In both cases, when Michael redirected the conversation, he was careful to summarize what Doris had said up to that point. He indicated his grasp of her ideas, and then he introduced a new topic area. Using questions to redirect requires a certain amount of tact so the speaker doesn't feel cut off or interrupted. This is where being able to summarize quickly, as we practiced in the segment on acknowledging, comes in handy. When you purposely use questions to redirect the conversation, your intention is to move on to other areas where you need information. This skill is valuable for a wide range of occupations, such as consultants, salespeople, lawyers, doctors, and interviewers of all kinds. Let me just mention a kind of negative redirection of the conversation, which often makes people angry. It's when you take a keyword, as we did earlier, and use it as a jumping off point for a new topic area. Only this time, the new topic takes the conversation completely away from the speaker. Suppose a group of people are chatting together and one of them says,
"Did you hear about the most recent unemployment figures from California? I think that's going to have an impact on our sales of RVs there."
And then another person in the group keys in on the word California and says,
"Oh yeah, California. My wife and I just took the kids to Disneyland and we all had a great time. Have you been there?"
That's an exaggerated example, but I think you get the point. The second person was one of those marginal listeners that we talked about earlier who hears key words but not the substance of what's being said. In this example, our marginal listener attempted to redirect the conversation by using a key word, California, from the person's previous statement. As a result, he revealed he wasn't really listening to the conversation. And he undoubtedly irritated the first speaker by abruptly changing the subject. Let's take a couple of minutes to review what we've covered so far in R of our CARES model. R actually stands for research and respond. And we've talked about research so far. Researching is the ability to ask the right questions at the right time. There are basically two kinds of research questions. They are, the open-ended question and the closed-ended question. Closed-ended questions can be answered with a one-word answer, such as yes or no, or with a simple, factual response, as in the question, what's your favorite color? Blue. In the funnel approach to gathering information, you begin with broad, open-ended questions and then ask closed-ended questions to gather details. Follow-up questions are built on the speaker's responses by identifying keywords in those responses. There were three general guidelines to follow in asking any question. The first was to keep it simple. Ask only one question at a time. The second was to follow a topic to its conclusion. And the third was to be sure your questions are non-threatening. Because trust is so essential in communication, the wrong question can destroy rapport in a flash. Never begin a question with, "Why didn't you?" or "Did you really think?" Once people feel defensive about answering your question, it's hard to regain a good rapport with them. The three functions that questions serve are to expand, to clarify, and to redirect. Expansion questions give a signal to the speaker that you are open to whatever he has to say on the topic. You want to be careful to ask your expansion questions in such a way so you don't bias the answer. The question should be as neutral in judgment about the topic as possible. Clarifying questions help you, and sometimes the speaker as well, to get clearer on the meaning of what's being communicated. Tell me more. Please give me an example. Those are signals that you're asking a clarifying question. The third function of research questions is to redirect the conversation. This is where you summarize or acknowledge what's been said so far and then, with an expansion question, move into a new area of discussion. As you know, researching has another whole side to it, and it has to do with giving feedback. And that's what we'll learn and practice in the next segment of this program.